Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The housing market is heating up, with prices going up much faster than inflation, and in hot markets, reaching new records. The most impressive gains have been in boom cities and for higher-priced homes. Many young people are struggling to be able to afford a house, even to pay the rent. This hour on Point, the hot real estate market and what it means for you. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Had you hoped to own your own home and now find it's impossible? Has the value of your house gone up and up? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from New York is Laura Casisto, U.S. housing reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Her piece, Housing Recovery Picks Up Steam, you can link to at our website, onpointradio.org. Laura, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
House prices, home prices jump as supply pinch plays out. What's the pinch, Laura, in the supply chain?
So what we're seeing is, as a consequence of the housing crash, we're not seeing builders building very many new homes, especially on the starter end. They're targeting all of the new home construction to the very luxury end, where it's just much safer. It's just much easier for people to get a mortgage. They feel like it's a much better bet. And then what you're seeing as a consequence is younger buyers just not able to get into the housing market at all. And so they're not benefiting from this big run-up in prices that we've had over the last few years.
What are the numbers that tell us things are headed up?
Sure. So house prices fell about 30% from the peak of the housing boom to the trough, and now they're within 4% rather of their previous highs, not adjusted for inflation. But that's still a huge recovery, especially because there were definitely people, if you talked to them in 2007, 2008, who thought house prices might really never recover.
When was the trough? Early 2012, I guess?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was the bottom. And now we've got up within 4% of their peak, though inflation adjusted. I think I read you here saying they're still 20% off of that peak.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, for sure. But if you're a homeowner, for you, it matters really most. Inflation doesn't matter so much, right? You care whether your home has recovered its value.
You call it a lopsided housing market recovery. You've touched on that, but explain exactly what you mean by lopsided.
Sure. So what we're seeing is a lot more inventory at the high end. If you're an affluent buyer with good credit, you have a ton of homes to choose from. It's your market. But if you're somebody who's looking for that typical starter home and you're just trying to start out, and maybe you've got okay credit, but you're still young, so you don't have a really deep credit history, you're going to still have a really, really tough time finding a home to buy.
New home construction, if I read you right here, up 17%. That was the strongest month in 8 years. If they're not building, where are those homes coming from?
Well, that is what I think the hope is, that trend from last month is going to continue. We have seen new home construction well below even typical historical levels, never mind the levels during the boom. So we've seen them well below what would be considered sustainable levels. And that's for a few different reasons. Builders are having difficulty finding land. Builders themselves are having difficulty getting credit. A lot of smaller builders were just totally decimated and went out of business during the crisis. And so as a consequence, we're just not building very many new homes, period. But the hope is that last month's sales are a harbinger of good things to come.
Give us a sense of the map, if you would, Laura. What are the hottest cities and how different are they from those who are not hot or from smaller towns where things may not be moving in the same way?
Yeah, so I think another thing that we saw coming out of the housing boom was we saw a lot of young people deciding to rent much longer and so flocking to these these hot cities like New York, San Francisco, Denver, Dallas, and that's also where the jobs are. But the challenge now, especially for young people, is that a lot of the cities where the jobs are also now becoming the most expensive and difficult cities to buy a home. And so you see people locked into renting. You have basically a choice. Do I go where I can find a good job, or do I go where I can potentially afford a home?
You had Portland, Oregon, you're reporting with a 12%+ increase year-over-year gain just in a single year. Seattle, 10% plus. Denver, 10%. Where else is hot? And what's driving the hot cities?
Yeah, I mean, a city like Portland is really interesting, right? Because Portland is a historically very affordable city, and for the last few months that I've been covering these numbers, they've had double-digit home price growth. They've also had some of the hottest rent growth in the city. Portland's a really interesting one that I think probably kind of is emblematic of what's going on, where they're getting a big influx of people who are coming out of California, especially, some in some cases Seattle, who are getting priced out of those really expensive San Francisco, you know, Bay Area markets, and going to Portland, and that's driving prices up really, really quickly there. So that's probably a really good example of what's going on.
Home ownership overall in the first quarter at almost a 40-year low, 63.5% of what is that, adult Americans owning a home, I guess?
Yeah, households headed by an adult, yeah.
And among those 35 years old, 34%, lowest level since 94. Are we at lower levels of homeownership in spite of all this because banks have tightened up on lending?
So I think there are a few different reasons. So one for sure is that it's much more difficult to get a mortgage. Banks are afraid, I think, of giving bad loans and of facing blowback. You know, banks have paid out huge settlements, and so they're much more cautious than they used to be. I think a second thing is that people are much more cautious than they used to be. Owning a home is no longer seen as this foolproof investment, and so people are waiting longer to buy a home. Maybe people who lost their homes during foreclosure aren't going back and buying one. And I think the third reason is that rents have gone up so much that people are finding it really hard to save for a down payment if you're paying that much in rent.
So a complicated kind of picture there. And you quote the chief economist at Freddie Mac, of course, at lending for housing from the federal government. It's a great market if you have pristine credit and lots of money. Well, duh.
Yes. but that is I would not understate how much that's a real reversal from what things were during the boom. During the boom, it was a great time for lower middle class people to be able to get a really easy mortgage and get a home. And you can debate whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely a real shift that we've made it sort of so difficult for, you know, middle class, lower middle class families to be able to get into home ownership.
Laura Cosisto, U.S. housing reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for being with us, Laura.
Yeah, thank you so much.
With us from Philadelphia, Susan Wachter, professor of real estate finance at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, co-editor of Shared Prosperity in America's Communities. Susan Wachter, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. And from New York, Chris Mayer joins us, professor of real estate at Columbia Business School, directs the Paul Milstein Center for Real Estate there. Chris Mayer, thank you for joining us.
Great to talk with you, Tom and Susan.
So I'm looking at the numbers here. Median home prices, San Francisco, Oakland, median, $770,000. Tops the list I'm looking at, first quarter of 2016. U.S. average, $218,000, that median home price. And everything scattered in between. New York, New Jersey, way up high. Seattle, up $383,000. Boston, $379,000. Washington, $370,000. Lower end, you've got Atlanta at 168, Chicago 209,000, Dallas 210,000. Of course, some of those lower priced places, things are really going up fast. Susan, how do you describe the housing market that we're in now?
It's a divergent market for sure. The market's diverging, and the strong markets are where the job growth is. So we are suffering the consequences of that in terms of housing prices, which are reflecting the underlying demand for markets where the jobs are.
Meaning, you call it divergent, some call it bifurcated, some call it sort of upstairs, downstairs story on the housing market. Do you see that, Chris?
Yes. I mean, The housing market is really a reflection of the underlying fundamentals of the economy as a whole. The people who are at the top are seeing wage gains. They are looking to buy homes and participate in the economy. And you have people at the middle and the bottom who haven't seen the same growth in growth in earnings, and that's playing out in the housing market. Although, as you point out, obviously there are individual markets where the factors are different. I would also say that this is not a recent phenomenon. So if you go back to World War II and look at housing post-war, the cities that are at the top of this list, places like the San Francisco area, other cities in California, New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, Boston, you know, just looking at the most expensive cities, those cities have had house prices that have been rising faster than the rest of the nation for 50, 60 years.
But, I mean, so, everybody thinks that
I would say, if I may, Chris has got it exactly right. However, it's not a new phenomenon if you go back in history 60, 70 years. But if you go back in history 30, 40 years, it is a transformation. So this growing cities phenomenon, cities like New York, Washington, D.C., even Los Angeles, Boston, these are all declining cities. They, of course, during the Great Recession thereafter, 2009 to 2012, they and the rest of the country prices declined. But what's phenomenal now is that in this recovery, it's cities that are coming back strong, and particularly big cities.
Post-World War II, Chris, the sense we had of it was big new suburbs being built, come on in, the water's fine, home ownership, let's go.
So the pattern has been very different for places where supply is constrained and supply isn't. So I would sort of say I can pick any 30-year period or 20-year period over that time period, and if you rank home price appreciation, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, Boston will all be at the top of the list. New York in the 1970s had challenges. But any long-term period, those cities have been going up faster than the rest of the country. And, you know, there are two kinds of cities. There, you know, I have a paper called Superstar Cities with, you know, a couple of colleagues of Susan's at Wharton, Joe Jerko and Todd Sinai. What you find is places in the Northeast and California where it's very hard to build, there's been a tremendous growth in demand to live in those places. And I'm talking metropolitan areas, not necessarily individual cities.
Chris, hold the thought right there. We've got to take a short break right here. We'll come back and jump straight into it. Chris Mayer at Columbia, Susan Wachter at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. We're talking about America's new home price boom. It is an uneven boom, divergent, have and have not boom. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about America's new home price boom, strong for the haves, not so strong for the have-nots, and it depends where you are, where you live. Chris Mayer is with us from Columbia Business School, professor of real estate there. Susan Wachter is with us, same professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. You can join us this hour. What are you seeing in home prices in your area? What's moving? What's not? Who's buying? Who's selling? And what kind of homes are drawing the big bids? Are you in a hot market, a cool market? Do you see higher-end homes going higher still? What about the homes in your price range? High-end moving. Here's a video for luxury property in Arizona, area where prices are in the millions of dollars.
Filled with imagination and extraordinary detail, this more than 9,600-square-foot gated estate, securely tucked into Silver Leaf's Upper Canyon, offers the absolute best of everything.
Yeah, the best of everything. Great. Good if you can get it. Here's Felicia Cass. Was hoping to be a first-time home buyer in the greater Grand Rapids area of Michigan. In March, she told Michigan's Fox News affiliate she kept losing bidding wars in a tight housing market there.
It's an emotional thing to buy a house. So every time you make an offer, you think, oh, this is going to be it. And then if you get outbid, it's devastating. So I don't know. You have to, I don't know, just don't get your hopes up so much because you're going to probably get in a bidding war.
Susan, Chris, I want to come back to this issue of cities and what's going on there, but let me put a case to you from one of our listeners. This is Emily, and she says she's a young couple, almost debt-free, been consistently working since college in their late 20s now. Home ownership should be comparatively easy for us, she writes. Despite frugal budgeting, saving for a down payment seems impossible. She says, couldn't save fast enough while prices were low, feeling doomed now. What's going on there, Susan?
Emily is an example of what is going on, which we call a discouraged renter effect. Rents are so high and prices are so high that it's discouraging. In order to save enough to make that down payment, it may be 10 years or more. And this is what we are seeing playing out. You know, since 2006, there are 6 million more households who are renters and zero net new homeowners.
Zero net new homeowners because that percentage of homeowners is not growing. Chris, does this go back to homes not being built? And if there's that much demand, why aren't they being built? Maybe people were afraid it wasn't a good investment, but it's proven to be pretty good since the recession.
So I believe home builders follow demand pretty closely. If they can sell the homes, I can promise you they will build them. You know, an example of this, by the way, is if you talk, you know, Houston is a great place to look at.
Okay.
Houston is, you know, has added many millions of people since in the last 40 or 50 years. Fastest growing city in terms of numbers of people. The median home price in Houston, $213,000, below the national average. Where there's demand and where home builders are able to build, that is, they can get the rights to build, they will. And that construction keeps prices down, makes things affordable, and allows people to get into the housing market. And in Houston, home builders will build entry-level places. The problem is where there's demand and inventory challenges, builders are either not able to do it, or, you know, I think as you were talking about, people are having a problem kind of getting into the market. So if you look, for example, forget about, 2004, 2006. Go back to the early 2001.
Okay.
The average FICO score for a borrower for a Fannie and Freddie loan was a little under 700. Today it's 750. Credit has become incredibly tight for people in the middle and the bottom. And so where home builders are having challenges selling houses are in part because first-time home buyers are having a hard time accessing the market.
So if historically we've built around, I think you've said 1.5 million units a year, but the last 8 years or so closer to 1 million.
Well, excuse me, Tom, it's 1 million single family, but we're down to 700,000.
Okay. But does that mean that they just don't believe that there's that buying power in that huge swath of the American population?
Well, bottom line, there isn't the buying power. And the buying power is in part because okay credit is not okay anymore. This is a sea change in the credit standards where we're certainly, of course, not lending the way we were, nor should we in the bubble years, but we're not lending the way we have historically, which means with people with okay credit who could make a go of it are not getting credit. First-time home buyers are locked out, and they're locked into renting or staying with their parents, which is at all-time highs. We've never seen so many people living with their parents.
So, Chris, what about those homes that are, I don't know, at the higher end? Start wherever you like, 500K or a million and go up. What does that look like?
So, in general, the higher end is doing better. Credit is less of a problem for those folks, and there's actually a lot of credit by banks for people who are above the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae lending limits to give them loans, which is, you can lend is $600,000 or $700,000, $1 million mortgage. Banks love those customers. Those customers have, particularly folks with good credit. Those customers can get rates that are incredibly competitive in the market. There's a lot of competition for good borrowers. But again, this is a big change, not from the boom, but from long time before then. So if I go back to 1982, way before any of the, the excesses of the housing market,
okay,
70% of Americans aged 35 to 44 owned a home. So, people are talking about getting married late, et cetera. 35 to 44 is not young. I'm on the north end of that, so maybe it's young for me.
Okay.
But, more than 70% of people in 1982 in that age group owned a home. Today, we're now down to below 59%,
wow,
and it continues to shrink. And So if you look at people, they're just not getting into home ownership. Credit is a part of it. I really think, you know, people, we know that people in the middle and the bottom are seeing wages that are challenging. They're seeing rents that are challenging, and they're just not able to make that transition. And that's a big problem, because if you imagine what you're going to be like if you get into retirement age and you have to make rent payments and you've had a hard time saving.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
how are
scary.
You going to be in retirement? So home ownership, if you look over time, historically, between 85 and 90%, mm-hmm. 85 to 90% of American households owned their own home at a point in time in their lives. That's fundamentally changing. And it's, you know, for people who want to get into the home, it's the emotion of getting there. But for people who are accumulating savings, you know, focusing on those folks, it has become very, very challenging for them to pay their bills and to put money aside that they used to do by buying and paying off a mortgage they're not doing today.
We've got a listener here saying it's basically just getting too expensive to live. Another way of looking at that, income's not what they ought to be. And yet, Susan,
right.
The Case-Shiller index is within 4% of its 2006 peak. So it's going up. This is the home price index. Somebody's paying the big money. Is this foreign buyers? We hear a lot about people coming in with suitcases full of cash and buying up fancy homes.
Well, it is foreign buyers, particularly in certain markets, particularly in Miami and in the West Coast, San Francisco. But it isn't just foreign buyers, and they're not really what's driving this except for specific markets. It is the high end has come back strong, and our mortgage rates are at historic lows. So it yep. actually pays to be a homeowner. It is the choice between homeowning and renting in many markets. The cost is less to be a homeowner if you can take advantage of these low mortgage rates. The problem is getting the credit. If you're at the high end, you have the wealth to get to put down a down payment, no problem. At the low end, 20% or 10% of $200,000, $20,000 is not what you have. A low-end renter is absolutely going to find that a challenge to put the money aside how many years, 10, 20
yeah,
years, to
yeah.
make that $10,000, $20,000. Now, there are mortgages that are available that are far lower down payment mortgages, but you need pristine credit, which means if you're borrowing, you can't make a mistake. You can't miss one of the credit payments. How many households can say that?
Not so many. Joseph writes to us on Facebook, houses being bought by a few so they can flip and for a profit or rent. Families renting, not a lot of buying homes for families. Susie in Bennington, Vermont. Thanks for calling, Susie. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay? I'm in.
Loud and clear. You're on the air, Susie.
Great. Well, hey, I just wanted to comment on some of the disparity between what's happening on the coast and the big cities compared to Bennington, Vermont, which is rural Vermont, and my home price, which I purchased in 2008, right before the bubble burst, keeps going down. And that's quite frustrating for someone who was hoping to build equity in my home, and it's just not happening. We're not rebounding.
Can you refinance to get in a better situation, Susie?
You know, when I purchased the house, I had a pretty good price. But recently I wanted to refinance so that I could get some money out to make some repairs on my home. And my housing price keeps coming down, and I'm unable to refinance because my mortgage is, I won't have 80-20 in a mortgage.
Yeah. Susie, I appreciate your call, and I'm sorry you're stuck there. Chris, what do you see in that story?
So a couple of things. The first is housing prices, as we've learned, don't always go up. But for Susie, the biggest benefit of her home, as well as everybody who's buying a home, is not the price going up. It's a place to live. And so you have to separate out land from the structure. Houses physically deteriorate and require money to put into them. It's the land which is really where the appreciation comes. And in most markets in this country, land doesn't go up except at very, very moderate rates, other than these coastal markets where land is very scarce and hard to build. And in Vermont, and you know, I have relatives up in Maine that I see a lot, and I own a piece of property there, you know, there hasn't been the demand. There's a lot of land available, and that doesn't play well in terms of appreciation. Most of the return that Susie gets is living in the having a place to live every year.
Of course, but if it's down and you want to move or you want some flexibility, hard to find it right there. Thomas in Nashville, Tennessee, in the middle of the country. Thomas, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was just wanting to say that here in Nashville, we have had a massive population boom over the past 4 or 5 years, and it has driven the home prices up considerably. A home close to downtown that in 2011, 2012 would have been $80,000 to $120,000 are now selling for $400,000. And I heard some of your guests talking about contractors not wanting to build. Well, we're having a construction boom here, but every single new place that is built, and mind you, most of these places are single-family homes. They're not massive. They're 1,200 to 1,600 square foot homes.
Okay.
They're selling in upwards of $400,000, $450,000. And I'm 26 years old, looking to buy a home. I've been trying to buy a home for the past 2 or 3 years, but even with the VA home loan, I just can't find an affordable place where close to where I want to live and where I work at.
Even with all that, Susan, I mean, look at this one. Give us some analysis here. What is Thomas stuck in there?
Thomas and Susie, for that, reflect national trends, transformative trends. The cities are coming back. Cities like Nashville, which for decades were losing population, are coming back strong. And rural areas, like where Susie lives, are actually losing value, losing population. And cities are where the jobs are. It is supply. Supply is an issue in the sense that construction costs are up, land is difficult to get in some markets, but it's also demand. Demand for cities, and cities by their very nature are constrained in supply. If you want to be in the center of Nashville, you want to be in Nashville. The rural area surrounding Nashville will just not do, and the jobs are coming back in the Nashvilles of the world, not just on the coast, but also even Houston, Dallas, Austin. These are really strong markets, and markets which for the first time rents and housing prices are exceeding inflation and wage growth for years. This is a new economy for us, one that I think is going to be difficult for those young households on the low-skilled end households who are looking for where the jobs are, but where the jobs are where the prices and rents are just too high.
You know, Chris, I want to ask in that regard about gentrification. My brother lives in Dallas, and he's been watching neighborhoods that for many years are pretty sleepy just kind of catch fire. And, you know, we were together a couple weeks ago, and he's saying, where are people on low incomes going to live? Because those lower-income neighborhoods within the city, in Dallas, over the last, I'm looking here at numbers, say median sales price up 43% in Dallas-Fort Worth area in the last 5 years, or 2010 to 2015 anyway. So where are they going to live as their neighborhoods become gentrified? You know how Dallas is. It's got a ring of pretty nice suburbs all the way around. You have to leap all the way over that to find something cheaper way on the outskirts?
Yes. One of the patterns about urbanization, as Susan talked about, is unlike when it was 20 or 30 years ago, when what would happen is you'd have a few nice places in downtown, home prices would actually fall in the immediate surrounding areas, and then there'd be kind of the nice suburbs, you know, that were 20 miles out. Today, a lot of that is filling in, and you're seeing home prices across the board in places with good locations that are, you know, that are much higher. And recognizing that, you know, when population and demand grow, it's not surprising that prices should rise for those places. And that urbanization of jobs, and I think, you know, just as much about, you know, the attractiveness of being close to downtowns like Dallas, like Nashville. I mean, Nashville has seen a tremendous pickup in terms of kind of the attractiveness of, you know, being, you know, restaurants and all these kinds of things. And, you know, there has meant proximity is expensive. You know, by the way, if I go to Nashville, the median home price in Nashville is $204,000. So there is affordable housing being built and around in Nashville, but if you want to pick the best locations, you know, the key thing your caller says, you know, I want to be in the location that I'd like.
Sure.
That's their trade-offs. And if everybody wants to be in the same location, price is going to be higher, and that's a challenge,
I mean,
even within a city where housing is affordable.
Susan, for working people, that gentrification leaves me wondering, my brother in Dallas wondering, where will they live?
Yeah, and that's an extremely good question. For one, they may live farther out, longer commutes, or they may not, in fact, move to be able to move to those hot job market job markets. Or there are areas that are still lower end in pricing, and we're going to see more gentrification in those areas. So this is not a short-run trend, short-run phenomenon. I believe this is a sea change in American history. The cities are now going to grow across the board, and we are going to see daunting affordability challenges where the job growth is.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about America's new home price boom. It's patchy. It's not the same all over. And some people just locked entirely out. Strong for the haves, not so strong for the have-nots, the housing market right now. Here a little bit from season 39, HGTV's House Hunters. Newlyweds Mike and Amy Harris moved in with Mike's mother to try and save money to buy their first home.
This Maryland couple has been bunking in mom's basement to save up money, and it's been a difficult adjustment.
We don't even have a bathroom.
To shower, we have to walk up two flights of stairs to get to the second floor.
We're ready to go, and we're ready to find our house that's our own.
Mike and Amy haven't exactly found their ideal starter home, but they're willing to compromise if it means they can get out of mom's basement fast.
Get out of mom's basement. Not everybody has guitar accompaniment when they're looking for a home, but here's one more from Property Virgins on the channel. Host Egypt Sherrod shows first-time homebuyers Kevin and Melissa what kind of house the Atlanta suburbs they can get for their $229,000 budget.
Is this a master bedroom?
Lord, I hope not.
And this is our...
master.
They ain't got no character.
Oh, this is nice. Oh, this is... They've redone this.
Now, this could possibly work, but in a way different house.
In a way different house. And the gentrification? 2014, San Francisco Chronicle created this short film titled A Changing Mission about gentrification in the Mission District there. Here's one resident describing what's happening.
Serious money is, flowing into San Francisco and stirring things up, especially in the Mission. Everyone wants to be in the Mission.
And if you've got money, you can be. You can join us this hour. Realtors, what are you seeing in your world? Who's calling? What are the expectations? How's the inventory? And is the American dream still about buying a house, owning a home? Who's it possible for? Chris Mayer is with us from Columbia Business School. Susan Wachter from the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania. Lots of people online here getting in touch with us. This is Ned in Atlanta. This is my wife and I will be buying soon for the first time, but the market in Atlanta is so hot, we're priced out of most areas that we want. We feel that pressure all over. Chris says, he's seen a 75,000 increase on a $150,000 house in Austin, Texas over 6 years. But if I sell, I can't afford to buy. Why not, Susan? What do you think in Chris's case? Big increase on the value or the market value of his home, but if he sells, he can't afford to buy?
And that explains why inventories are so low, because prices are up across the board. So, yes, fine. Sell the starter home and buy the move-up home. That's the tradition. But moving up that ladder is more and more difficult because prices have gone up in these hot markets where the jobs are, so where you want to buy. The fact that you've got appreciation doesn't mean you've got enough appreciation to turn it over and get a better home. That price has gone up as well.
Here's Professor Cook writes to us. There's also the result of the loss of our middle class. Rich folks are out there. That's where the profit, the money is. Sometimes the free market doesn't work. Alex in New Orleans, Louisiana. Alex, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Look, my house I bought last year for $235,000.
Okay.
A year before, it was $30,000 less. This year, my same house would cost me an additional $20,000. My wife and I bought our house, and we were lucky to get it when we did. A mile from here, a $200,000 house 5 years ago is going for $340,000 now. It's unbelievable how much it's increased. But
What's driving it, Alex? What do you think is driving prices there in New Orleans?
A lot of people are moving in from out of town. There's this bohemian atmosphere here in New Orleans, and we keep finding people from like San Francisco and the West Coast moving in. And I mean, the cost of living here in New Orleans is so much less than it is elsewhere in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got more to spend. So
a kind of spill over or spill into New Orleans. Alex, I appreciate your call. Chris, what about that? People who jump off the coasts from some of those real hot cities or even from some of the hot central country cities to lower price areas. Is that part of what can suddenly make an uptick in a local market?
Yeah, and to some extent, warehouse prices were in some of these neighborhoods a couple of years ago was well below what it would cost to replace the homes today. And so some of the increases, I mean, you know, look, the economy's improved. Mortgage rates are still low for people who can get them. And if you look at existing home sales, you know, they're, you know, back at levels that we saw in 05, 06. So there is a lot of demand for housing. We are seeing some prices rise, and it's very hard in places for people to, you know, to buy a home. But in the overall, you know, there are individual neighborhoods which are in challenging shape. But if you look at the overall price of housing today in the U.S., inflation adjusted, we're still well below the peak that we had. So there are individual markets where there's a lot of demand and people, you know, if lots of people want to go there, prices are going to go up. But on the aggregate, we're not talking about a housing market where prices have just become, you know, excessively large. The challenges are many people are, you know, who would have been buying some of the higher priced homes or mid priced homes don't have the income to come in. And so you really, it is, as you've been talking about, the haves and the have-nots.
Let's touch down in the middle of the country again, Madison, Wisconsin. Charlie Wills is with us. He's assistant manager at First Weber Realtors in Madison. Charlie Wills, thanks very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. How are you guys?
Pretty good. What's the market look like in Madison? What's selling? What's not?
Everything under 400,000 is selling in days, and kind of the message that you're hearing or everybody's hearing about the rest of the country is prices are increasing quickly. Again, it's hyper-local, so it depends on the neighborhood. You know, some neighborhoods are exploding at 15% more than they were last year, and some are 3%. It just depends on that location. But everything under 400,000 is hot, and everything over 500 is a little slower.
That's interesting. Who's buying the under $400,000 homes in Madison, Charlie?
You know, it's a huge mix. So you've got your first-time buyers, your move-up buyers, and now we're having our boomers sell their $600,000-$800,000 houses, and they're buying some of these in cash, and then, you know, the younger generation who's trying to buy with maybe 5 to 10, 20% down, they can't even compete with those boomers because they're buying houses in cash at 200, 300, or 400,000.
And who's buying those bigger boomer houses, or are they not selling? That's why you've got softness up there.
Yeah, we've got a lot of softness. No, not a lot of people are willing to move up into that generation. You look at the generation X and Y, they've learned from their parents that they don't really want that style. They don't want that much house. So they're down in the $400,000-$500,000 range, and then they want to travel and explore life and save money for college for their kids. Or, you know, just they're living differently.
Susan, are we going to strand some of those boomer houses somehow? The big houses that they want to move out of, maybe as they go into retirement? Is there a generation that can step up and buy them?
Depends on where they're located. If they're located near the markets that are growing, strong markets, in much of metropolitan America, those houses are selling. They're doing well. Madison, Wisconsin, at the high end, sounds like there's considerable weakness, but that is not average for the U.S. as a whole. Actually, high-end houses are doing okay. They're not doing as well as that 400,000 range, but they're all doing quite well. As Chris says, yes, we are 5% under and 20% under inflation adjusted 2006, but not where the jobs are. And that's what's relevant. You need to live where you can work. And there, housing prices are increasing faster than wages. So this is why we see homeownership rates decline, and this is why we see people living longer at home with their parents. And this is not going to reverse. It's not just a matter of time where supply will catch up. Supply will increase, which is helping to limit the increases. But nonetheless, the increases in housing prices and rents are with us. And this has been an extraordinary long run, and it will continue. And in these areas...
You don't see a bubble in the hot cities, Susan?
No, it's not a bubble, because it's fundamentals. And fundamentals are, employment, where jobs, employment, and wage growth is, and it's where people want to move, because they want to move up. They just can't move and be owners easily. And it's getting difficult to rent as well in many of these markets, which is why we're seeing gentrification and the markets where housing is still affordable and available. We're seeing pressures there, exceedingly high pressures. And you know, by the way, Tom, this is not a shift in aspiration. Young people still want to be owners, and understandably so, because owning is a way of ensuring, hedging against extraordinary rent increases. It's a way of saying, we found our place and we can stay here. Mm-hmm. But that option is less available today because of the difficulties in getting a mortgage for households who are starting out.
Suzanne in Barrington, Rhode Island. You're on with our panel. Suzanne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. Yeah, I just wanted to comment because we were fortunate enough to purchase a home in probably the best, one of the best neighborhoods in Rhode Island. And if it wasn't for the fortunate help of our family, there was no way we were going to purchase. Ironically enough, a home that was in our price range was about $300,000, $350,000. It was actually a small cape knocked down to build an $800,000 McMansion there was no way anyone could afford, at least in our price range. And it's still for sale now. So it's kind of a joke as we drive by it. And it's unfortunate that this is the housing market that we're facing.
Suzanne, how much help did you have from your family to get the down payment together?
10%, and thankfully we were able to also save some money that we could put in for some repairs to the home as well. So, but if it wasn't for that, we'd be lucky if we were to make the 3% for the FHA loans.
So 10% on something like $300,000, and the family moved in pretty heavy to help you with that, and that's how you were able to do it.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, good for you. I mean, Chris, not everybody has family that can or will do that.
That was how I bought my first home back in Boston in the early 1990s. Was getting a little help from my parents as well, and about a quarter to a third of all new home buyers rely on that. The place that really hurts is for folks who don't have access to that. One study that I think looks particularly minority borrowers and the low home ownership rate among minority borrowers is the lack of access to family wealth to help them get into the housing market.
I mean, not
so
to
if
mention
you have the help, it's great.
And not to mention that banks want to do jumbo mortgages now. And I'm reading here from the Wall Street Journal, you know, headline, that means fewer loans for blacks, Hispanics. And there we go again. Charlie Wills, if I may, in Madison, what do you see about how people are putting together the down payments on these 400,000 and below homes that you say are selling like hotcakes? Where's the money come from, Charlie?
We do have some situation where gift money is coming in, has been indicated by some of the other panelists. But majority of the money is coming because they've lived with their family or they've rented for an extremely long time. They saw that break in 2009 where the market crashed and they decided to stay and rent. Well, during that time, we counseled them through that, like, hey, just continue to save your money. And they've got a substantial down, anywhere from 10 to 20%, because they don't want to pay the PMI. So they've just been more patient. And, you know, that's not always the best case for everybody in the market. But that is where the money's coming from, is that people are actually just living with their parents to make up that difference.
Stuart in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Stuart, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment regarding, I'm a lower middle income person, and I was able to find a local organization called NeighborWorks Program, which it actually had to take a class regarding just home ownership in general, and then it offered to pay my whole down payment without me paying it back unless I either rent or sell the property, which is a wonderful program because without it, I would have never been able to purchase the
home. Why do they do that, Stuart? What do they want in return?
It's just to help. That's a great question, because it's the areas they allow you to pick from are deteriorating houses or houses that have been foreclosed or need work. Like the house we bought was a VA foreclosure, which hadn't been lived in 2 years and definitely needed some work. So, I mean, the value of the houses around my area around $100,000 to $110,000. We purchased a house for $67,000. So, I mean, it was an opportunity to get our foot in the door and get some work done in the house.
Good for you. I hope the neighborhood works out for you. I mean, some cities you can see there and organizations working to push back against areas that have had foreclosure, maybe some deterioration. And that's a good, sounds like a good thing for everybody if it can work. One more here. Marty in Austin, Texas. Marty, what's your story?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you for your guests. I'm in Austin, Texas, and recently I quit my job because I realized living in Austin, I just can't afford anything here. I'm a high school teacher. Mm-hmm. I've been here for years. I'm kicking myself in the tail for not buying things when it was cheap. But now I've got credit in the 800s. I've got lots of cash. I'm a veteran. I'm looking for a place to move to, and I'm actually thinking about Detroit, someplace that hasn't gentrified yet, that I could get in, buy a city block, and tear it apart and start building up and start the mess myself. I look around Austin, and I wish I'd gotten in early.
Just can't do it in Austin. Susan, there's Charlie. He's ready to throw a dart at the map of the whole country. Where would you point him? He's got cash in the bank, great credit score, wants to go out and buy a block in Detroit. What would you recommend?
If he can get a job teaching in Detroit, and that's where he can see himself at home, that's perfect. That is a perfect story. Teachers in particular are having a difficult time of it because their wages put them at the middle of the
school. But he's got the cash. He's got the cash now. Where else would you look? Detroit would be one possibility.
Well, there you go. Detroit is coming back. Cities are coming back across America. Cities that are surprising, like Detroit, are coming back. And yeah, I think that's a good choice. There are others like that. You know, there's not Texas, which historically has been where affordable housing is increasingly not the affordable access point which it used to be, but it is where the jobs are.
Chris Mayer, we've got just a few seconds. Point our caller somewhere, Chris. Where would you send him with his pile of cash and aspiration?
Philadelphia. Hometown.
All right, there's an option. I'm looking here. Atlanta, median single price. Home, $168,000. Chicago, $209,000. Dallas-Fort Worth, not so far, but still just above $200,000. Maybe there as well. Got a changing market, a sea change, says Susan Wachter, and we're watching it change. Susan at Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much for being with us again today, Susan. Always great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Charlie Wills at First Weber Realtors in Madison, Wisconsin. Good luck there, Charlie, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And Chris Mayer at Columbia Business School. Thanks so much, Chris.
Appreciate your having me, Tom.
Great to have the conversation. Listeners all over the country, good luck finding a place, buying a place to live. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.